I went to a family gathering and I didn't know that I was allergic to certain fruits. And I ate a fruit pizza.
Oh, no.
What is a fruit pizza, Mark?
It's a sugar cookie, yeah. With like a cream cheese, kind of sweet frosty, with all the fruit on top. It had it like a pizza, yeah.
And then you get a glaze. And you get a glaze on top of it, and it's like Pinterest worthy. It's beautiful.
So we're calling it a pizza. It's a cookie cake.
It's a pizza.
It's a fruit pizza.
It's a fruit pizza. Yeah.
This is the Generally Accepted Accounting Podcast. That's GAAP for all you accounting nerds. It's a podcast produced by Casey Peterson, LTD, or a firm of CPAs and financial advisors based in Rapid City, South Dakota. And we'll be talking about tax, finance, accounting, audit, and a bunch of other topics that sound really boring, but that we're going to make hip and cool. Or we'll try anyway. So stick around to learn more. Hi, I'm Hillary Dobbs Davis, Client Experience Manager for Casey Peterson, LTD.
And I'm Evan Lutis, Visual Production Associate for the same firm, which is handy.
Welcome to the first Generally Accepted Accounting Podcast Happy Hour.
For our first ever installment, we did a first-of-its-kind interview with Mickey Lyons, CEO and family nurse practitioner with Crook County Medical Services District, one of the firm's clients in Sundance, Wyoming.
Mickey has multiple nursing degrees, including a Bachelor of Science in Nursing, a Master of Science in Nursing, a Doctorate of Nursing Practice, and a Natural Health Certification.
Before joining CCMSD as a provider, Mickey served as a registered nurse for the facility in the hospital and emergency departments for 7 years. She also worked as a school nurse for Crook County School District for 13 years.
Oh, also, she's married to our managing shareholder, Mark Lyons, who also joined in the interview. This is a two-parter, and for the first part, it was almost all business, specifically rural healthcare clinic business.
Mickey did a deep dive, talking about the different types of rural healthcare clinics, the challenges they face, why the clinics are so important, and what keeps her coming back.
We also talked for quite a bit about fruit pizza. Don't worry, there will be a recipe in the show notes. Listen in to learn more. Well, welcome to Margie and Mickey. This is our first ever GAAP Happy Hour podcast. We've only been attempting to do this for like 8 months, so thank you guys for making the time. Thank you, universe, for coming together to do this.
During tax season, no less.
During tax season. I mean, it didn't affect you guys as much. But right, but hey.
We got the room.
We got the room. Yes, we kicked out a very important board meeting or something that was happening beforehand. So for this one, we're talking about rural healthcare, which weirdly, both of you seem to have some experience in. Oh my gosh. All right, so first up, we're talking about what is the difference between a rural health clinic and just a regular old run-of-the-mill health clinic?
Well, you're looking at me.
You want to take, but you have to take that one?
Like the man here should answer that question.
Clark, take it away.
I can take that one.
Okay.
Perfect.
Don't let me dominate this, by the way.
No worries.
The difference between a rural health clinic and a regular clinic that maybe you would walk into in an urban area is that CMS has basically enhanced the reimbursement of rural health clinics.
Okay.
So if you walk into a clinic in an urban setting like Rapid City, mm-hmm. Most of it is fee schedule reimbursement. But when you walk into a rural community and you're entering a rural health clinic, there's cost-based reimbursement on that side of the world. So basically, there's actually two different types of rural health clinics.
Okay.
There's a standalone rural health clinic, which means that it's not attached to another critical access hospital. So okay. It's not affiliated with a critical access hospital. It's operating, for the most of them operate on their own with no affiliation with anyone else.
Okay.
Okay. And then you have a critical access rural health clinic, which then opens up a different means of reimbursement.
Okay.
And there's been a lot of changes in that area just in the last, in 2020, I think that all changed.
Where the classification of things or just
not necessarily the classification, but how they get paid on the Medicare side, because really it doesn't matter if you walk into an urban clinic, a standalone rural health clinic, or a provider-based rural health clinic, the commercial side of things is going to be paid pretty much the same. You're going to be based on E&M levels. You're going to get reimbursed based on E&M levels, which is evaluation and management, which is the severity of your visit.
Okay.
On a fee schedule basis, where it all changes typically is with the Medicare and Medicaid side of reimbursement.
Okay.
So if years ago with the standalone rural health clinics, those clinics had a cost limit for their visits. So those clinics, I think years ago, it was maybe $112 per visit is the maximum that Medicare would pay.
Oh, wow.
On the other hand, a provider-based rural health clinic didn't have an upper limit. And what was happening was the standalone rural health clinics were failing. And those standalone rural health clinics were critical to rural communities.
Right.
So CMS recognized that and they said, we are actually going to now cap the reimbursement, the cost per visit that we'll pay in a provider-based rural health clinic. So those clinics that are attached to a critical access hospital, we're going to cap that at a cost per visit. And we're actually going to take the savings from that and we're going to increase the limits that were imposed on a standalone rural health clinic. Trying to level the playing field and really trying to make sure that those standalone rural health clinics are viable over the long term.
Right.
So the provider-based rural health clinics, their limits were based on the cost reports that they filed in 2020. Mm-hmm. That rate was locked in, and then there is a increase that occurs every year. So the rates that were locked in 2020, mm-hmm. those are specific to each clinic. And then annually on January 1, they increase those limits every year. Those limits are getting increased at a slower pace than the standalone rural health clinics. So they're putting more funding towards the standalones and capping the provider-based rural health clinics.
Does that make the provider-based rural health clinics mad that they're doing that? Or do they see that, like, no, rural, these are critical to rural communities. We understand why this is happening?
There's a lot of lobbying going on right now trying to reverse that. Because when that happened, I think it was 2020. I'm almost positive that's the year. Is that the year?
I think it was.
When that happened, everybody was also entering COVID.
Oh, yeah.
People couldn't come into the clinic, didn't want to come into the clinic, were scared to come into the clinics. So their volumes were getting reduced and their costs of nursing and finding providers and all around staffing was increasing. So we thought in 2020, that was the greatest year for them to ever do that. But unfortunately, you go 3 years past 2020 or 4 years past 2020 and the costs of staffing clinics has not been reduced.
No. Correct.
So suddenly you're now in this situation where it looked really good in 2020, but there's now a lot of provider-based rural health clinics that can't recover their costs on the Medicare side of things.
Okay.
Because they're being capped.
So it's sort of unfair. It's like it's flipped over. Now it's almost unfair to them.
Mm, right, right.
Okay.
The other major difference between clinics, so you have the provider-based rural health clinic and the standalone rural health clinic, and then you have your, I call them urban clinics, I guess, that you would walk into in like Rapid City. Clinics is the services that they can provide, and you can probably talk about that more than I can, because the rural health clinics, really, the intentions of them are family practice clinics, whereas the scope of a urban fee-for-service clinic, you could pretty much provide any type of service in those settings.
I mean, theoretically, you can provide the same services. The problem is it's not affordable, right? So you walk into an urban clinic and they have specialists. For us, we do primary care and we can do some of the other things, but they're not being done by specialists.
Right.
You're not having a cardiologist on staff. That doesn't make financial sense to
do
that.
And because of the upper limits, you can't afford to
Right. So is Cook County considered a rural health clinic or a provider-based?
Provider-based.
Okay, gotcha. So yeah, you could offer whatever in theory, but how are you going to make that? Yeah, how are you going to make financial sense out of that?
Right.
Okay.
You're not.
Like, so you don't. What are the challenges of managing a rural healthcare clinic operationally and also financially?
I think operationally the challenges are they're typically in rural areas, right? So you don't have a great pool of people to pull from.
Sure.
So you're trying to find talent, mm-hmm. nurses, MAs, CNAs, even receptionists, radiology techs and lab techs. You're trying to find that talent and it's really hard to find those people. And so financially, then it becomes very difficult because your volumes aren't high, especially, you know, where we're at. I mean, it's a very rural area. So you're trying to match you know, what people want for pay and trying to get equipment and, you know, what services can you bring to the community that people want, and balance that with staffing levels and
pay. And that probably fluctuates frequently depending on your populace, how old they are, what's going on in the communities and around you. And so you have to look at that constantly and make those, try to make those adjustments.
For sure.
Oh, regulatory requirements. What's the most challenging regulatory requirements that rural healthcare clinics face?
I have one on this that we're actually working on right now. One of the regulations in a rural health clinic is that it's a requirement that you staff that clinic with at least 50% of the time with NPs or PAs.
Oh, okay. Right.
And then the remaining 50% is an MD.
Or can be.
Or can be an MD. The challenge in that is the communities a lot of the times will gravitate towards the MD and make requests that we need to see the doctor more in the clinic, when in reality it's equivalent care between an NP, PA, and a doctor. A lot of the times in a family practice or primary care setting, it's a very equivalent service. So there's always, in a lot of the communities that we work in, it seems like there's this constant battle of, why can't my doctor spend all of his days in the clinic? Well, it's a regulatory issue.
Sure.
That's one of the rules of participation for a rural health clinic, is that you staff that clinic with at least 50% of the time as a nurse practitioner, a physician assistant. So the communities don't understand that a lot of the times. And then you also financially, on the other side of that, you're struggling with this upper limit. And there's also productivity standards, which we haven't talked about, which is a, I call them CMS penalties. You have the upper limit and you have a productivity standard.
Okay.
So providers have to see a certain number of patients, and your cost can't be above a certain limit to maximize your reimbursement. So with
the- just handcuff you left and right.
Around every corner.
Every time.
Something.
Yeah.
The doctors, actually, the MDs, have a requirement for productivity to see twice as many patients as a nurse practitioner or a physician assistant. So financially, it makes sense to reduce the time for a doctor in a rural health clinic, because I don't think I've ever seen a physician ever meet the productivity standard in a rural health clinic. So you have financially the facilities trying to reduce that cost, and they're more expensive. So you're trying to reduce the time, reduce the cost of the physician. The community wants to see the physician because they don't necessarily understand differences between
a doctor.
The three categories.
I just want to see a doctor.
Yep. So there's always this constant battle between, I think, from a regulatory standpoint of what you can and can't do, how the community perceives that, and then financially, what actually makes this work when you're dealing with what are really unrealistic productivity standards for doctors and cost limitations of how much time the doctors can actually spend in the clinic.
So if the doctors are not meeting their productivity standards, does that mean that you are just always paying the penalty then, because they're not meeting the standards? It's just sort of built in to, you just know you're going to pay a penalty on that?
Pretty much.
Well, yeah. Okay. Essentially.
Okay.
It just is what it is, right?
You kind of almost say at this point, is this on purpose? Because I feel like you just want the money, and so you know that the standards are ridiculous. So you're like, yeah, but they keep paying us stuff. So.
Well, it's like you're paying the mafia for protection.
Frank,
well, I gotta pay what I gotta pay,
right? I just gotta do it.
That's right.
This is what I have to do.
So, yeah, I don't want the government coming after me, so I just gotta pay this completely unrealistic fine. Fantastic.
But then on top of that, you have things like telehealth, right? So prior to COVID, you could do telehealth in a clinic, but it was really not a financially beneficial thing.
Right.
During COVID, they loosened that up, and then suddenly you could get paid your rate to do telehealth visits because people didn't want to come into the clinic,
right?
Which was great. But now outside of COVID, you can still do telehealth, but now they've reduced your rate. So you get paid like $92 a visit compared to, you know, all your other visits to do telehealth.
Even though you're still providing care.
Right.
Still taking the time to do it.
Yeah. The provider's still doing their thing. You have to have all of the equipment.
Right.
You're still taking that time. So there's just all these different pieces in rural health clinics that there's benefits, but then there's all these other things that are very challenging.
Right. Because, I mean, I would especially think in a rural area, if for some reason you couldn't, if you live even farther away out from Sundance and you can't get there, great, I'll call in, we'll do a, we'll, you know, just do a face that way, yeah, a FaceTime kind of thing. Perfect. Yeah, but except you're not going to make all the money. Even though you're spending the same amount of time and the care and all that stuff. Nope, sorry, can't argue for all that. That makes perfect sense. Ooh, this is a nice kind of squishy one. Why are rural healthcare clinics such an important component of making healthcare accessible in rural America?
I mean, theoretically, that's their purpose, right?
Right.
Is to give access to care in rural America.
Right.
I mean, for us, for instance, we have 3 rural health clinics in one county, but there's 40 miles between each town. So you have to be able to provide that access, especially before when you couldn't do telehealth because it wasn't reimbursable. Really?
Yeah.
So, I mean, they're super important so that people can get what they need, but then they also have their challenges. So,
because if you live in any of those areas out there, if Rapid's the closest and you're looking at 2 hours, hour and a half, 2 hours to get something if you need it, who's got the time or
right,
can do that, provided that you can be seen, you know, and you can find someone.
Right. And in this day and age, there's people that, I mean, they don't have vehicles. They
right,
don't have transportation to get outside of their own community.
And if so you're elderly,
you don't have these rural health clinics,
what do these people do?
Right.
No, it saves lives.
Yeah, absolutely.
It people does. Walk into the clinics having heart attacks they don't know.
Right.
And you.
My arm's tingling.
Yeah. Happened 2 weeks ago.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
So
when I was probably 10 years old, I went to a family gathering and I didn't know that I was allergic to certain fruits. And I ate a fruit pizza.
Oh, no.
What is a fruit pizza, Mark?
You know what a fruit pizza is?
What's a fruit pizza?
This one had all of my favorites. Delicious. It had kiwi, bananas.
Yeah.
All the good stuff.
You guys, how do you know? No.
It's a sugar cookie. Yeah. With like a cream cheese, kind of sweet frosty, with all the fruit on top. And had it like a pizza.
Yeah. And then you get a glaze. And you get a glaze on top of it. And it looks, it's like Pinterest worthy. It's beautiful.
So we're calling it a pizza. It's a cookie cake.
It's a pizza.
It's a fruit pizza.
It's a fruit pizza.
Yeah, if you saw
it's a Nebraska boy.
Okay. It's a crust.
Okay.
It's a sauce. Next, it's a topping, right?
What? Next happy hour podcast.
Well, apparently not.
Not for Mark.
It was probably the first fruit pizza I have ever had ever seen.
And the
one. And at 10 years old, I had no throttle. It was the best thing that I'd ever had.
Yes.
Turns out that I'm deathly allergic to kiwi and bananas.
Oh, no.
So we're coming back from Camp Crook, South Dakota. If anybody knows where that's at.
That's middle of nowhere.
Middle of beautiful country. Beautiful country.
Beautiful country.
Excellent tornadoes. Let me just turn.
Okay. That's his gauge for everything.
I will never forget that trip because I don't think I've ever seen my parents so terrified. Mm-hmm. And I don't think I've ever been so scared because my throat was swelling shut. And had it not been for the rural health clinic in Buffalo, I wouldn't have made it.
No.
Because it would have been another, from Camp Crook to Belle Fouche,
right,
has to be over an hour. And they took me into the clinic, gave me a shot, put me on oxygen, and probably the only reason that I'm here today. So I hadn't really thought of that in terms of rural healthcare and like how important it is to have those clinics.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
It's not just the cold and cough stuff that walks in.
No.
They save lives.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So if it hadn't been for rural healthcare clinics, these fine people wouldn't have to be listening to us talking right now.
True.
Incredible.
True statement.
They wouldn't know what a fruit pizza is. And that is the real shame of things.
Yes, yes.
Right?
Could have saved
everybody. We've educated everyone on the fruit pizza.
On the fruit pizza.
Most of our listeners are not from South Dakota, so like we are disseminating this information to the world.
Yeah, that's bonus content that you don't pay for.
Yeah.
You're welcome.
You know, we'll try to find a Pinterest recipe for fruit pizza. We'll put it in the show
notes. We'll put it in the show notes. I don't even like cooking. I like make a fruit pizza, just to prove a point.
But please don't send it to Mark, because that is a fine.
No.
Yeah,
don't. Mark doesn't get any.
Don't bring that to the office. I have terrible willpower.
Is it just kiwi and bananas, or is it other food that you're...
And cherries.
And cherries,
yeah. Fruit pizza and an EpiPen. And my present.
So after that happened, did you have to have like one of those, okay, well, clearly...
Oh, yeah.
Just stuff. Let's poke them with a bunch of things.
Oh, all of the tests where they poke your back.
Yep.
Put the stuff on it and it swells. Turns out I was allergic to everything on the ranch. Literally everything on the ranch.
might want to consider a career not in agriculture.
That's the reason I ended up where I am.
That's why he's in a skyscraper right now.
His dad's like, get out.
Get out.
You're worthless, kid.
I'll use the shrimp pizza. So yeah, we talked a little bit about the pandemic. Obviously, that had implications for lots of healthcare facilities. Was there beyond telehealth? What were some of the other implications for rural healthcare clinics when the pandemic happened?
I think during the pandemic, the biggest thing was that, like Mark alluded to, people didn't want to come to the clinic. And so people, especially in primary care, they stopped all of their preventative medicine. And so now we're playing catch up.
Right.
And so there's a lot of people that didn't get their mammograms, their colonoscopies, you know, and so finding a lot of those issues that have, you know, progressed over the last 2 or 3 years.
Right.
And people that became ill, diabetes, congestive heart failure, those kinds of things, but they didn't want to come in. And so had we caught them sooner, it would have been much less of an issue than it is now.
Hey.
And so that's what we're seeing specifically in the primary care, on top of, you know, now we're doing telehealth and things like that. But that's really the biggest issue that we're seeing.
I could say, yeah, that's unfortunate.
I wouldn't have thought of that.
Yeah.
But I was listening to the radio the other day, and they were talking about like this recent-ish uptick in cancer diagnoses.
And that's exactly what
And I don't think
about.
I don't think they even brought up like, yeah, people have been putting it off for years during the pandemic, but that makes perfect sense when you connect that.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And probably you push it off 1 year and you're like, oh, it's not that big a deal. And we go another year, then we go another year, and yeah. And then suddenly it's not until you're having problems that you even think to do it.
It's right, going to the dentist, you got 5 cavities the next time.
How did this happen? But exactly.
Yeah. Say what I think. Just from your perspective, there's a lot of challenges that come with running a rural healthcare clinic, it sounds like. What keeps you wanting to do this? Like, why do you go back and do this day after day? Like, what is it? What is the draw for you that makes you want to do this?
I think for me, part of it is I grew up in the community that I work in. And so being able to come back and take care of all of the people that I've known my entire life, or families that, you know, there's a half a degree of separation between, you know, everyone. And so I think for me, that's the biggest piece. When I see patients in the clinic, I mean, there's not a day that I don't get hugs when people walk out the door. And they're so grateful to have somebody that's willing to just listen to them and hear what their, you know, concerns are, and not try to dictate to them what they should be doing, but give them some ownership and, you know, and just some suggestions. And, you know, they know that I really care. And so I think that for me is what brings me back all the time.
That sounds like the perfect reason to do it, is that despite all of the regulatory and all of the garbage, there are people and there are connections that make that worthwhile. So
exactly.
I feel like a better way to ask that question would have been, why in the hell do you drive an hour and 15 minutes every day?
Well, that's on the second part of things, so I will get there.
They wanted my sappy answer.
So when you're working like with us as a firm and the partnership that we have, what services that we provide, what are the most things that are the most helpful to you in your role and to Cook County just overall?
Do I need to leave the room for this?
We might want to cover your ears.
Right.
She'll give feedback. I'm clearly rated.
I've been thinking about firing them, but no, I'm just kidding. Honestly, the thing that is most helpful to me is that consulting piece. And so just that, I know if I have a question about, you know, where should we provide this service, or what services can we bring on, or what should we designate this space as to get the most, you know, bang for our buck? I mean, I know that there's people that have that answer. And so, you know, regardless of whether or not, you know, we live in the same house.
Handy.
I know, right? It is super handy. But I mean, it's beneficial to know that there's somebody that has that healthcare background and rural healthcare background that can answer those questions and has our best interest, you know, in mind.
Yeah, I think that just means you can charge her more, I think is what I heard. But
I think so.
Yeah, I think I hold that you're accessible 24/7.
Wow. Yeah, I know, right?
I feel like I should get a discount. But
I don't know, one of the funniest things that's happened recently is when you guys were like talking accessibility, right? And not to like pat ourselves on the back, but
we're gonna pat ourselves on the back.
Mickey called me one day at like almost five o'clock, and your PBJ reporting was due. And I'm like, I don't know. I have no clue what the answer to that question is. I was like, why don't you give Charles a call? Here's his cell phone number.
Who?
I
actually have.
What, 6 o'clock in Florida?
Yeah.
So Mickey calls Charles, and Charles answers the phone. He's at the cigar bar.
Shocking.
A cigar. And you get you have an answer to your question.
Yeah.
So
it was fantastic.
I thought that was a super funny story because I'm like, I don't know, but I'm sure Charles is at the cigar bar and will be happy to answer a phone call.
That's a good sign that you've surrounded yourself with the right people.
That's right.
No, I mean, he answered right away, and I was like, hey, Charles, this is Mickey. I know you're busy. I just have one question for you. It's a simple question, rattled it off, and I was like, thank you. You were awesome. Enjoy your evening.
We made the deadline.
I know. And away we go.
And we're done.
And what the work, he got to work while smoking cigars.
Yeah. Just probably Charles' favorite way to write your work.
Exactly.
Win-win for everybody, I feel like.
Just see if there's any cigars on Goody to send him. Thank you.
But there's no reason he had to answer his phone.
Well, yeah. That's true. He was off.
It's actually probably 7 o'clock there.
It is a 2-hour time.
Yeah.
It's 2 hours. It's 2-hour difference.
Yep. Yeah.
So numbers are hard. So
they are. I'm just not that great with numbers.
Time zones are right. Other people that are running rural healthcare clinics, I'm sure that's probably a small world. You probably all get together and have support groups, and there are beverages and stuff like that.
Oh yeah, sure.
How do you talk each other off the ledge when you're like, these regulations, this is crazy, these patients, everything is wildly out of control. Like, how do you pull each other back?
I think part of it is you just have to understand that it is what it is, and without it, people don't have that access, right? So although it's super frustrating sometimes, there's a reason they exist, and there's a benefit to having a rural health clinic in the way that they reimburse. And so, for instance, vaccines for Medicare is probably, like, I could get on this soapbox for hours because it's probably the most frustrating part of my life in what Medicare will pay for, what they won't pay for, the place of service. You have to do certain ones but not other ones. And so there's weird things like that that if you don't understand, you're just spinning your wheels, right? Mm-hmm. And so I think just having those conversations of it is what it is, but you have to understand that if it doesn't exist, what are people supposed to do?
Right.
And so our purpose here is to take care of people,
right.
Specifically take care of our elderly people that are on Medicare, because that is the intent, right?
Right?
And to make sure that they have the ability to have a primary care provider that can do all of the things that they need done and do all the preventative medicine and they can get to us.
So it's like a reminder, this is your higher purpose. All of this frustration comes along with doing something that is really, really important.
Right.
And if it wasn't really, really important, you probably wouldn't have all of this frustration.
Right.
So yes, that is unfortunately part of the whole package deal that you get.
Exactly. So I think you just always have to keep it in perspective, right?
But yes, because a lot of these elderly people probably farmed and ranched in these communities. They have a right to live where they have lived their whole lives and not have to go live in a big city that they probably don't want to live in. They should be able to live in their homes for as long as they can and have access to good health care.
Exactly. Yeah.
Kind of just the tool chest you've been given, and
right.
Stuff has to get fixed either way. So the alternative is a lot.
You got, worse. Yeah. So make do with what you got and do the best that you can for the people in your community. So
you might be MacGyvering something together with a paperclip and a gum wrapper, but if somebody gets saved, then at the end of the day,
you know what? That has happened.
Okay. So.
I would be disappointed if it had not.
Right? I've done EMS. Like, you make splints out of, you know, sticks and
whatever
ripped up t-shirts. Like, it's what you do.
Whatever is handy. Improvise. Overcome.
Exactly.
I feel like there needs to be, like, an A&E show about this now. Like, there's Ice Road Truckers.
Right.
There's the weird Treasure Island thing, uh-huh. Or whatever that is. And then Rural Health.
You are totally onto something.
Right.
Yeah.
Like, if you did a rural EMS...
Yeah.
Or the life show.
Oh,
you could make a fortune.
Yeah.
I mean, the stuff that they see in the
small towns. Oh, yeah. Are the small towns? Well, that's like crazy. That Northern Exposure in Alaska, that show, whatever, 30 years ago.
Yeah.
He just set it in the middle of Wyoming. Same thing.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
We'll send Mickey to work with some GoPros and.
Sweet.
We'll pitch a pilot.
That's super fun.
Kevin Costner's going to pick it up. It's going to come out to Yellowstone.
You know, like, I can't remember the question you asked, but when Mickey was talking, it made me think of something. Like, we're not in it every day, but the cool thing is we get to step into it every once in a while and be there, like, real life boots on the ground. Mm-hmm. And you get to interact with all of the employees and sometimes the community members. And what's interesting is it doesn't matter, like, where you're at in this area that we service, everybody's dealing with the same issues.
Yeah.
And rural America has a unique way of pulling together and figuring things out. They're all, for lack of a better word, they're all survivors. They figure things out. It's always been difficult in small communities because you don't have the resources that maybe other communities do. But it creates this loyalty when you go through that together and you fight together. And I think that's the coolest thing about working with not just rural health clinics, but rural facilities in general. It's unbelievable to me how dedicated people are to their communities. Mm-hmm. And I think it has something to do with the fact that what you said earlier is you have people walking into the ER, into the clinics, and it's a completely different experience when you know them personally. And the level of care that you receive is probably better than any care you can receive anywhere, because it actually means something to the nurses. It means something to the providers. It means something to the person that admitted them to the facility. So from the moment you walk in there, they probably know who you are. They probably went to school with your kids. And everybody's fighting together to provide the best care possible. And it's not just the care. It's people sometimes being put into situations where they really are probably not qualified to do what they're doing, whether it's business office, finance, or even just taking care of people that are walking through the door, but they all find this way to elevate and do great things. And that builds loyalty in the community. It's always amazing to me when there's a need in the community and the facility asks for support, the amount of commitment that everybody has in the community to make sure that the healthcare system is going to be successful long-term.
Right. Like, they recognize how important it is to have that.
A lot of the times it's the biggest economic engine in the community. It's not just the healthcare and taking care of people, but from, I mean, I'm finance, so this, my brain always goes right back here, but from an economic perspective in these communities, the hospitals, a lot of the times, are what makes all the other small businesses in the community work. So,
absolutely. Yeah. That's true. How many places, rural or otherwise, is that the healthcare facilities, that's what is your largest employer. That's what everything, all the services around that, they cater to that. So, but yeah, in a rural community, that would be, it makes total sense. Everything goes through that. It's like the hub, you know. See churches, now it's healthcare is sort of how it's sort of changed.
Churches, hospitals, and bars.
Bars, yep. So I'm never really married.
It all comes back around to happy hour.
There you have it.
I'm in a church, a bar, you
are in the end of the
hospital. Go to church, you go to the bar, to the ER.
And now the legal stuff. This podcast and associated communications are intended to provide general information about tax, finance, investment, and other financial matters. Although KCPherson LTD has made every reasonable effort to ensure that the information provided is accurate, we make no warranties expressed or implied. Be aware that this is not a comprehensive analysis of the subject matter covered, and is not intended to provide specific recommendations to you or your business. Investment advisory services are offered through Avantix Client Partners. Commission-based securities products are offered through Avantix Investment Services, member FINRA SIPC. Distributed services are offered through licensed agents of Avantix Client Partners, 3200 Olympus Boulevard, Suite 100, Dallas, Texas, 75019. The Avantix entities are independent of and unrelated to CPS Financial Services, LLP. Although Avantix does not provide or supervise tax or accounting services, our financial professionals may offer these services through an independent outside business. Not all financial professionals are licensed to offer all products or services. Financial planning and investment advisory services require separate licenses.
Hey, Evan.
Hey, Hillary.
Why can't you lie to an x-ray technician?
Because they're really smart.
True. Also, they can see right through you.
Because of the x-rays.
You got it.